Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose with your host, John Stanko. This program will help you find your purpose and, more importantly, how to make your purpose work for you. And now, here's John Stanko.
Hello out there in internet land. This is John Stanko. And as we do this show live, it is Friday afternoon, doing it a little later today than I have been doing it. And so the weekend is before us, but during this pandemic, the weekends are just about the same as the weekdays, just about the same as any day. And so I trust that whenever you're listening to this, you are doing well. Again, the day that I am recording this has been a really interesting day. Yesterday was too. I shared on my Facebook Live a broadcast today of two experiences I had yesterday that are related to purpose or related to what I do and enjoy doing. And I won't go into those again if you, because you can go watch the presentation or the broadcast for that, but very purpose driven and very enjoyable. Today I've been working away and did some work on my manuscript, Changing the Way We Do Church. I am in the home stretch. It's taking me longer than I thought, mostly because I have so many other projects that I'm working on, but I am making progress. My goal and hope is to have it out by the end of August. I'm going on vacation August 28th, so I want to have it wrapped up and in Amazon and available by then, and that is Changing the Way We Do Church, 8 Steps to a Purposeful Reformation. But gosh, today I've talked to people in Australia and the UK and Kenya, and I just sent out an email for those who have registered for my online purpose classes that begin next Saturday, which that date is July 25th. I have a class on Saturday, a class on Sunday, and a class on Wednesday. And gosh, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22, 24, 26, 28, 30, 33 people have registered, and more on the way. So I'm going to cut off registrations tomorrow, just so I don't want to overcrowd the classes. I want to make sure I can give personal attention to each one of the people who will be joining me on Zoom. And of course, my model for this, my incentive for doing this, was the creativity class that I just completed online. That was a 6-week program. This purpose class is going to be 4 weeks. And boy, the creativity class went so well. I thought, well, let me take the next step and do online purpose. And somebody I wrote today, I said, yeah, it's the Stanko School of Purpose that they will be attending classes through. And so who knows? Maybe that is the case. This week, I really officially announced, speaking of schools, that I have a fundraiser going for the Dr. Stanko Academy in Nairobi, Kenya. We have to move the school and build a new facility and build an orphanage because the orphans are living in the classroom. We built beds a year and a half ago, and I didn't really understand that they were going to put the beds right in the classroom. So we have some of the orphans that are sleeping about 6 inches away from a metal roof. And they're not complaining. They didn't ask for it. But I feel like we need to do something. And so, speaking of all that, one of my board members, Bill Rhodes, will be coming on the show in a minute, as we have done in the past. He'll be talking to me, and I'll be talking to him, and we'll be talking about purpose and our longstanding friendship and how that has made a difference in our lives. But anyway, so that's where the Dr. Stanko Academy is concerned. And then I'm just about, I almost was finished with my weekly blog, and I've been writing about this experience I've been having lately where I am just overwhelmed with this sense that I am doing what it is that I'm supposed to be doing right the way I'm supposed to be doing it. And so I'm trying to explain that, why I think I'm having this this, as John Wesley said, he described it as his heart being strangely warmed. Why is my heart being strangely warmed so much recently in light of the work that I am doing? And I mean, the bottom line is I think it's happening because I am involved in so many things that I love to do, and I sense God's presence with me when I'm doing them. So I'm going to do my best to explain that. Yesterday I did my next entry in my Purpose Study Bible series, and we're going to be looking at the next weeks of Joseph and his story in Genesis, which no matter how often I read it, I can't stop reading it. I speed read it so I can get to the end because it's just so gripping. And I've always laughed when people will say to me, well, the church needs to be like a family. And I said, what, that family? Your family? My family? That Joseph's family had serious issues. I mean, when they sold him into slavery, they were so happy. I mean, they first conspired to kill him, and the only reason they didn't kill him was because they could make money from him. Now, I would say that's a dysfunctional family. And yet God plucked one of them out and made him, in effect, the leader of the world at that time, and eventually had all of them being the conspirators around Joseph, that he was taking care of them. Also, one more thing, we're going to read Psalm 119 here in a minute, but I was playing with all the nations of listeners for this show, and just on Wednesday, I added four nations or territories, I guess, Anguilla, an island in the Caribbean, and Trinidad and Tobago. That was the second place I ever went in my international travels, and British Virgin Islands and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And, of course, I had Felicia Lynch on, who lives in Barbados. So she has a following in that area because of the work that she's done. But then I was looking through, it gave me a complete printout. I've had listeners, and I'm going to update this tomorrow on Facebook, Swaziland, Togo, Luxembourg, Kuwait, Malta, Antigua, and Barbuda. So, man, this is so cool. And it's as you can tell, I'm having fun with this whole experience because it was such a whim for me to start the show again when I did at the end of March, and then to see it go to so many places around the world has been a gratifying experience. And again, one of those encounters I have that this sense that I'm doing what I'm supposed to do in the way that I'm supposed to be doing it. Well, we started reading Psalm 19 on Wednesday on the last show that we had. We got up through verse 16. And of course, we're taking our time because there are 176 verses in the entire psalm. So let's pick it up at verse 17. And of course, this is a psalm that talks predominantly about the Word of God and its value and role in our lives. So verse 17, be good to your servant where I live, that I may obey your word. Open my eyes, that I may see wonderful things in your law. I am a stranger on earth. Do not hide your commands from me. My soul is consumed with longing for your law at all times. For you rebuke the arrogant, who are accursed, those who stray from your commands. Remove from me their scorn and contempt, for I keep your statutes. Though rulers sit together and slander me, your servant will meditate on your decrees. Your statutes are my delight, they are my counselors. I am laid low in the dust, preserve my life according to your word. I gave an account of my ways, and you answered me. Teach me your decrees. Cause me to understand the way of your precepts, that I may meditate on your wonderful deeds. My soul is weary with sorrow. Strengthen me according to your word. Keep me from deceitful ways. Be gracious to me and teach me your law. I have chosen the way of faithfulness. I have set my heart on your law. I hold fast to your statutes, Lord. Do not let me be put to shame. I run in the path of your commands, for you have broadened my understanding. Teach me, Lord, the way of your decrees, that I may follow it to the end. Give me understanding so that I may keep your law and obey it with all my heart. Direct me in the path of your commands, for there I find delight. Turn my heart toward your statutes and not toward selfish gain. Turn my eyes away from worthless things. Preserve my life according to your word. Fulfill your promise to your servant so that you may be feared. Take away the disgrace I dread, for your laws are good. How I long for your precepts. In your righteousness, preserve my life. So that takes us down through verse 40. So next week we will pick up our where we left off. But right now, let me go ahead and bring my friend and cohort in Purpose on, Bill Rhodes. Welcome back to Wake Up to Purpose.
Hey, thanks, John. Go Penn.
Good to have you. Yeah, it's good to have you back. So how you been faring during this pandemic? What you been up to?
Well, yeah, I've got a lot of underlying health stuff. So, you know, going back and forth to doctor visits, that's been different. And a friend of mine posted something online today. It says, whoever is supposed to go to Nineveh, would you please go already?
Yeah, and I saw a post, you saw it too probably from Bongi, that it was a picture of a child pouting, and it said, and I stayed up till midnight on New Year's Eve and welcomed this in.
Right.
It has been a year like none other.
Yeah, you know, you see on social media that, you know, I saw one the other day and I posted it, and it's probably doctored, at least I would think it is. This picture or this little video of a black bear. It looks like he's in a zoo and looks like he has nunchucks and he's just playing with them. It looks like, it looks like Bruce Lee playing nunchucks, but dressed up like a bear. And, you know, it's like who had bear with nunchucks on their 2020 bingo card. So
yeah. Yeah. Indeed. So what do you want to talk about today? Where would you like to go? It's your show.
Well,
take me wherever you want to go.
Well, you know, I mean, I wrote down some different things. Certainly the Joseph story is something that's interesting to me. You know, we go back a long way, and you know, a lot of my background. But one of the things that, you know, that I hear, I mean, you've said it, I've said it, you know, a lot of people have said it, you know, oh, well, you know, this is the new normal. And I've heard a number of people fight about that. And
right.
You know, that I don't want to, you know, I don't want this to be the new normal. I want to go back to the way it was because this isn't normal. And, you know, I was thinking about that. And, you know, I try not to be too much overtly critical, which, yeah, right, that happens. You know, my wife is the buffer for me. But, you know, whenever you think about it, you know, I'm 64 years old, and, you know, I can remember going with my dad down to the bottom of Patterson Avenue in McKeesport to this little dinky gas station and getting gas for 29 cents a gallon, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, people fuss about, you know, oh, I don't, you know, this isn't the new normal. I want to go back to what it was. Well, you know, I mean, in history, there's never been, I think whatever time frame you're in, that's the normal for what it is. And if you can adjust to that, then it plays in your head a whole lot better. You know, I mean, you know, there's the whole fight about wearing masks and not wearing masks, and it's been so politicized. And, you know, I think one of the reasons why there's so much of an issue here in the United States is, you know, we're touted as, and we're a country that has probably more freedoms than a lot of countries do. And so I think that attitude of freedom, almost entitlement maybe in some people, whenever that's, you know, challenged, then you get a whole lot of pushback. You know, I mean, you and I are old enough to remember whenever seatbelts first came out. And, you know, good old Ralph Nader, who does he think he is, you know? You know, this whole, you know, Jesus freaks back in the 70s, and, you know, long-haired, freaky people need not apply. Shoot, I even remember whenever the United States was going through the oil crisis, and in Pennsylvania, to buy gas, the last digit on your license plate, if it was even, you could only buy gas on even days. So we were buying a second car, and I purposely asked for the opposite license plate so I could get gas on any day of the month. But you know, the whole perspective of that, you know, what's normal. Whenever you look at the Israelites and see how they, you know, they were in Egypt, and you know, that was their normal, you know, being in bondage. But then, you know, they got free of that, and then living in the wilderness. But you know, the wilderness was their new normal. But yet there were certainly grumbling and complaining to go back to Egypt. But you know, in the wilderness, God took care of them. And but whenever they entered the promised land, that was where they were supposed to be. You know, there was the vineyards that were there prepared for them. But that's whenever they had to go to battle. And you know, I mean, that's whenever they had to go in and take what was rightfully theirs. And I think that, you know, taking what's rightfully ours is more in our heads than anything else, you know. I mean, certainly, you know, the mask is an issue, and Republicans and Democrats, and you know, whether COVID's real, and you know, whether it was, you know, there's just so much out there. But yeah, it all boils down to what's going on in your head. And I think if you can deal with that, you know, your head and your heart, you know, you said when at the beginning of the program that you were overwhelmed and that your heart was strangely warmed. You know, that opens up so much for me, knowing you the way I do. I'm surprised to hear you even admit that you have a heart, you know.
Yes, we and you would not be alone in questioning that. And so it go ahead.
No, I just, you know, it's certainly an interesting time to be alive, you know. And if you what are we going to choose to fight about, you know? I mean, you know, I just, and maybe it's because I'm not out as much as what I used to be, you know, with my health issues, being retired and being at home. But you know, shoot, I was just in Walmart this afternoon, and you thought it would be that it's the 4th of July weekend. Place was packed. And you know, people wearing masks, but they're wearing their masks down underneath their chin. And you know, it's a strange time. But the whole, I mean, all of history is a strange time whenever you look at it. You know, look at the folks that lived through World War II. You know, I mean, you know, 10,000-20,000 you know, men and women being killed in a battle in one day. You know, when Japan bombed Pearl Harbor, they had to wait for telephone lines to be able to communicate what was going on in Pearl Harbor with what was going on in Washington, D.C. So, you know, I don't know. I'm rambling a bit, but, you know, the whole perspective of people's purpose, you know, their purpose is to be, our purpose is to be lived out in our lives now. My son has this thing that, you know, he has on his website that you can buy. It's a clock, and it, like, the 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 9 o'clock positions is the word now. And so, you know, if you look back with regret or look forward with anxiety, I think the two of them are definitely cousins related to the what-if phenomena. And if you get stuck there, then you end up getting paralyzed. And I certainly speak from experience.
Yeah, it is. You're right. It's a matter of where we want to invest our energy. And, you know, for me, I am really likening this season. I'm not as concerned about what's going on in Washington or Harrisburg or any place else. My focus is the church and how the church is reacting to and responding to this, or how God may want to use it in redefining and reshaping what the church is and what it does and how it does it. And I think we've had the same kind of reactions in that world as we've seen, as you're mentioning, politically with the virus, and is it real, and you know, and only America could politicize a face mask. You know, that one side wears, you know, wants to wear them, and the other side doesn't want to wear them. And I think it's just the state of where we are. But for me, I liken this for the church to two events. One would be the Babylonian captivity, where the temple was destroyed, and they were taken away, and they could not meet face to face. They could not worship. They could not go with the systems that even God had established. And of course, leading up to it, they had said, "This is, you know," there were prophets saying, "This is not going to happen. God is with us." And Jeremiah is trying to say, "No, it's going to happen. It's going to be bad. You're going to be carried away. Nah, he's a false prophet. Don't worry about it." And so they went off to Babylon, and it took 70 years for them to figure out, you know, till they came back. And of course, I've been talking a lot. That's the time when the Psalms, the book of Psalms, that was not when it was written. A few Psalms were written then, but that's when the Psalms were put together. And they were put together with some purpose, with a message that Israel was trying to figure out what went wrong. How could this happen? And they still thought after they got there, some of them, that they were going to be right back. And so I liken it to that. And then the second is the second temple in 70 AD, when, again, the same scenario. But when the Romans tore that one down, there was no rebuilding it. It was necessary for the Jews to move on and find new ways of worship, new ways of transmitting the truth of Scripture. And so, you know, for me, I've watched next to none. I don't think I've watched one broadcast in 4 months. I get my news online. I look on the internet and read the headlines and articles that are interesting to me. I do read them. I think I'm fairly well informed, but I want to keep myself in my mind for what I consider to be a higher priority matters for me. I'm not saying they're not important for other people, what they're pursuing, but for me, it is purpose. It is how to equip people, individuals, for this this new season or whatever we want to call it, and hopefully influence the church along the way to use this time to change what, again, what I keep calling our delivery systems. Now, my church, we were planning on next weekend having a live service, and this week we were going to register and go through all the guidelines, but yesterday they pulled the plug on that. And that's what I've been saying, this rush to get back to face to face. We are missing the message, and the message is that I think God wants us to learn new ways of touching the world. And so, you know, when you were talking, it reminded me of Revelation 12, when it said, "The dragon saw that he was thrown down to the earth. He persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. But the two wings of the great eagle were given to the woman so she could fly into the wilderness to her place, where she was nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent. And the serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman so that he might cause her to be swept away with the flood." And that, to me, describes what we're experiencing: a flood of information, a flood of conspiracy theories, a flood of accusation, a flood of politics. And in my mind, Bill, it's all to distract the church. It's all to attack the church. It's all to destroy the church, as was shown, depicted in Revelation. It says, "But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and drank up the river which the dragon poured out of his mouth. So the dragon was enraged with the woman." Now, this sounds really spooky, and who's the woman, and what's this? And it tells us. And he says, "And he went off to make war with the rest of her children who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus." So the woman is the church, the dragon is the enemy of the church, and there's a flood. And you and I know how many of our friends, our brothers and sisters, are caught up in this flood. And yep. It's sweeping them downstream, and and we're turning on one another. It's if the earth doesn't open up and help us, and by that it's just symbolic of God's help, we can't make it. We won't make it because this onslaught is so powerful. And to me, it's an indication of how much our the enemy of our soul hates God and hates His church, and it is a concerted effort to discredit, undercut and to destroy the church, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And my wife just came in and behind me here, and whenever you were talking, she's pointing at the my phone, saying, "That's what I believe. That's my point. It's all a distraction."
Yeah.
So she's right there with you. You know, you were talking before about, you know, talking about being distracted, and you know, I mean, you know, I go back to Joseph. I mean, I love that story about, you know, his story, and like you know, you want to fast forward and you read through it one time and you read through it another time, and just, you know, while we were talking here, you know, he fast forward to the part where he's in prison, and the baker and the
the butler.
The butler are in jail with him, and this phrase struck me. It said, you know, they were put in there, and the prison guard put Joseph in charge of them. You know, that he was supposed to look out for them. And I mean, these two had high positions. You know, a cupbearer for the king, man. You know, you had influence there. You had to have trust, and you know, and in verse 6 of chapter 40, it says, "When Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw that they were dejected. So he asked Pharaoh's officials who were in custody with him in his master's house, 'Why do you look so sad today?' And they said, 'We both had dreams.' And then, you know, they told the dreams to Joseph, and, you know, he interpreted them. And in whenever he's talking with the butler, he said, you know, whenever you get out of here, because you're going to get out of here in 3 days, you know, don't forget to remember me whenever you're in front of the king. And, you know, I'm going to get to a point here, go back into Nehemiah as well. And he was the cupbearer for the king too. And he was all upset that the church, the walls of Jerusalem were all busted up, and he'd been thinking about that, been praying about that, and in the second chapter in Nehemiah, it says, "I had not been sad in the king's presence before, and he asked me, 'Why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart.'" And, you know, those two different stories about the cupbearer and the influence that they had with the king. You know, if the butler didn't remember Joseph, now it took a while for him to remember him, but he finally remembered him, and then Joseph ended up, you know, changing the whole economy of the Middle East at that time. And because Nehemiah had this had this heart hurt about the walls of Jerusalem being broken down, and I think whenever God puts stuff like that in your heart, I think that you know, is part of your purpose. I've learned from you, you know, what makes your heart sing, what makes your heart cry. And with Nehemiah, it was certainly that the walls of Jerusalem were broken down. And in the midst of that, not only did he pray, but God had given him ideas on how to take care of it. And so out of nowhere, you know, the king says, "You know, I know you, man. You know, you taste my food before I taste it." So there's a trust relationship there. There's certainly an influence relationship there that's not, I don't think it's identified anywhere in Scripture, but whenever you just think about the situation there, there has to be things where, you know, he hears stuff because he has to be there at the table side. And, you know, he has to keep his mouth shut. But in this time, whenever his heart hurts, God gives him ideas so that whenever the time comes, he's able to implement them. And I think about, you know, how, you know, following you, you've been to so many countries and how you love to travel. And now I think I know from our conversations vicariously, you're traveling to all these places. I mean, you know, 33 people registered for your purpose class. Did you ever think that that was going to happen back in May?
No, you know, I wouldn't have, you know, and I'm the online proponent, you know, but I was so conditioned to jump on a plane and go someplace that, and probably people were the same conditioning to have me come and do what I was doing there. Now, people are thinking differently and I'm thinking differently, and suddenly it opens up, you know, all kinds of options for people who could not have benefited from what the message that I have. Now I can deliver it to them. But I want to go back to what you said about Joseph, because Joseph says to them, you know, you're getting out, remember me. But it was 2 years before the butler remembered. And Joseph wanted to end it. You know, he wanted to get back to normal. He wanted to get out so he could get on with his life. But God kept him right where he was for another 2 years. Now, obviously, he was very successful. He was doing a good job. What was there for him to learn that he had to stay there? It wasn't so much what he had to learn. It was that the circumstances and history and things weren't right for him to be received the way that he was ultimately received. And that's, I think, where our faith comes in this season. So I'm very, you know, you said it, how much I love traveling. I'm prepared that I'm not going anywhere till 2022. I mean, I don't even think next year is going to be possible. I think this thing lingers. I think this thing, we're going to go out. I think the winter is going to be a great challenge. So I've ended travel. I am on to something new, and because I, like you said earlier, you made a good point. You know, if we can do that in our minds, it's a lot more productive and it's a lot more fruitful. It's a lot more beneficial for us as opposed to fretting over what was and strategizing how we can get it back. And of course, you. In the graduate program that we were involved in together, in one of the classes, we read the parable of who moved my cheese. You know, and in this story, some of the mice just pitched a hissy fit because somebody moved their cheese, and they sat there and were going to wait for the cheese to come back, while there were other mice that went out and looked for new cheese. Well, this is a season where our cheese hasn't been moved. It's been obliterated. I mean, it's been moved to another galaxy, and we've got to make quite a journey to get to that cheese. Otherwise, the only other option is to sit and cry over moved cheese, and that's not very productive. And so I want to go to where the cheese. I want to go find new cheese, and I know you do too.
Yeah, I mean it's there's so many things with Joseph. You know, I mean, you know, talking about him wanting to end it. I mean, you know, he's in the pit, and he's certainly wanting to end that in the pit. And I think in the beginning, the day after they throw him in or whatever. You know, I mean, he's hollering to his brothers saying, "Come on, you know, let me out of here. You know, we'll take care of this. You know, we'll take care of this. I forgive you. You know, we can work this out. We can work this out, but it doesn't happen."
And yeah.
Who knows what went on in those 2 years in jail? You know.
Well, I mean, yeah, and before that he was with Potiphar, so you know he. But yeah. The interesting, let me go back to that story, Bill. The thing I see is they threw him in the pit, and then it says they sat down to eat lunch. This is how callous these brothers were. They threw him in a pit. Maybe he breaks his leg. Maybe he sprains his ankle. Maybe he broke his arm. He's screaming and yelling, and they're saying, "Pass the mustard." Did anybody? Yeah. What's there to drink? They're just. It's business as usual for them, and And for them then to devise this scheme, this lie, to and perpetuated it for two decades with their father and the family, they perpetuated it so long that they believed it themselves. And that's why they couldn't recognize Joseph when they finally found him, because, as you pointed out, what was their mind? Where was it? Their mind was he was dead. And dead people don't lead Egypt. So he recognized them, but they didn't recognize him because they had believed a lie. And I think in this season, when we don't focus on the truth, ultimate truths, we are distracted and we don't see the reality or the fullness of what God is doing.
Yeah. You know, whenever you read that story about whenever he confronts his brothers, you know, he calls them spies and devises this plan to see, you know, they're going to betray the other brother and, you know, and getting involved in that. But there's a section there whenever I'm trying to find it here, that you know, after the thing, they test him, and then he comes back, and they said that you know, that he recognizes them, and they're, you know, he brings them in, and whenever he recognizes them, you know, he leaves their presence, and it says that he hollered and wailed, and I'm trying to find that verse, but you know, the servants were like, you know, geez, what's going on here?
Right.
Yeah. But yet, and you know, seeing them. Go ahead.
And now I was going to say, and he had named his children, God has made me fruitful and God has caused me to forget. Yet when he saw his brothers, he cried so deeply, and it was 22 years later after they had done to him what they had done to him. It's just very, again, this passion in this story, this human drama, this pain, this sorrow that Joseph carried of what his family did to him, yet it did not prevent him. God did not allow it to prevent him from taking his place as, and it wasn't just that his brothers bowed down to him. When Pharaoh put him in the chariot next to him, people bowed down to Joseph in Egypt, and Pharaoh wasn't concerned. He wasn't threatened by it. And of course, I've done a lot of writing, and I have a section in my Proverbs 31 Men book that will be coming out sometime in the last quarter of this year, that I think that Pharaoh in Joseph's story was a brilliant leader. This guy had it all together. He recognized talent. He promoted the right person who led him to Joseph. When he found the right person, he got out of his way. He let him lead. Boy, I wish a lot of leaders would read Joseph's story, not just from Joseph's perspective, but from the Pharaoh's perspective, because this guy, when you compare him to the Pharaoh of Moses that tore his nation apart, this Pharaoh saved his nation, and he did it because he didn't have to be in charge. He recognized somebody who had the plan, and he went and he supported him. And my hat's off to him, even though he lived 3,700 years ago. My hat's off to him.
Yeah. Yeah, wonder how he'd handle a Zoom call today, huh?
That's right. Yeah, he wouldn't. But you know, he wouldn't even be messing with it. It would be Joseph would be doing it, because Pharaoh, once he found the right man, he put him in charge and got out of the way and was not threatened by the honor, by the prestige, and by the anointing that Joseph had. And you and I know, in the church and outside of the church, how many leaders are threatened by people who are smarter than they are, you know, who are more gifted than they are. And again, this to me is what makes this Pharaoh a very significant leader that we have not studied enough in our, and you know, he's from Egypt, so we don't think he has anything to teach us. You know, we're only looking at
right.
You know, the members of the covenant community, but this is one example. This is one case study I think we should pay closer attention to.
Yeah, the whole perspective that, you know, I mean, he's basically putting him in charge out of a dream that he had.
Yeah,
you know, and,
he's a con. He's a convict.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. And you look at Joseph's life, and you know, I mean, he's a dreamer. You know, that's what I think God. I mean, we were talking the other day about, you know, him coming to his dad and telling his dad, you know, these dreams that he had, and you know, that. Jesus does, whenever he first does this, you know, is there some way that he's seeking confirmation of what he thinks God's telling him in the dream? Do you think that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think he's 17, so I don't think he has a lot of sense. You know, I think he's had some dreams that are way beyond his pay scale or his
sure.
awareness, and hey, you know, but the dreams were obviously so vivid, and the Bible tells us he remembered the dreams 22 years later when he saw his brothers. So, you know, these were so clear, and of course he was going to need that kind of clarity because he was going to go through hell before he reached heaven. And so, you know, I think, and as I said to you, I think both his brothers and his father knew exactly what those dreams meant, because they said, "Are we going to bow down to you, like, over our dead body? You know, no way is that going to happen." And you know, I've heard guys preach that Joseph was, you know, it wasn't wise. He should have kept his mouth shut. You know, but he's 17. You know, and he's being basically told, you're going to be in charge, and he's the second, he's the next to the youngest in the family. So you're talking some men who were significantly older than he was, and obviously a lot stronger because they overpowered him. But there's one point I wanted to make when you talked about his brothers coming in and how he wept, and you know how the servants just, they all heard him throughout the palace. It often troubled me, why did Joseph do what he did to his brothers? Why did he put them through? He put he gave them the grain, put their money back in the sack, and when they went home, they were terrified, and they were so afraid to go back because they thought they were going to, you know, be falsely accused. And then when they did go back, he put them through the whole ruse and arrested his brother Benjamin. But it wasn't until one of the brothers said, "Didn't I tell you," in Joseph's presence, "didn't I tell you," in their language, not thinking he could understand, "didn't I tell you we shouldn't have done that?" And it wasn't until he did all that to bring them to some point where they could say that they had done wrong. And as soon as he heard that, that's when he revealed himself to them. So very often, I think God puts us through situations where we come to the end of ourselves, where we come to some kind of confession, and we think it's going to disqualify us, but the opposite is true. It actually opens the door for God to reveal himself to us, because God is a God of truth. And wherever there is truth, even if it's bad truth, even if it's, you know, like the brothers said, you know, look what we did to him, that was truth. And when there was truth, it opened up the path for revelation and understanding and healing and wholeness. Joseph did save them. They all bowed down to him. It happened so naturally. It happened, nobody was opposing it, although I don't think they still liked him, but they certainly saw the hand of God. And again, like you and I have said, this story, you read it and you want to go back and read it again. And no matter how many times you've read it, you see new things, or you enter into this pathos, this drama of personalities and family that is irresistible.
Yeah, and I mean, can you imagine, whenever the brothers went back to get Dad? Oh,
mm-hmm.
By the way, Dad, yeah, Joseph's still alive. We threw him in a pit and sold him. But you know, he wants to come now. How did that go?
The Bible doesn't really tell us they told him. I mean, they could have perpetuated the lie, and you know, he somehow survived. We don't see that Joseph. You would assume. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you. You would assume that they would have had to fess up, or Joseph would have told his father the story. But the Bible never that's never an issue. Joseph had so moved on. And so had appropriated the truth of Genesis 50 that you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. Because even when the old man dies, even when Israel dies, what are the brothers? They're still a mess because they said he was just being nice to us till Dad died. Now we can expect retribution. There's gonna be hell to pay now. And so they come and offer to be his slaves, and there probably was the time when they really fulfilled the dream that they bowed down before him, and he said, guys, stop it! You still don't get it that you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good to save so many other lives. And he was saying, I'm past that. My days of crying are done. And so it's just quite moving.
Yeah, I was writing some things down here again about Joseph and with the dreams and that the preaching we've been under. You always got to get your 3 points and you try to have alliteration in there. So I wrote down confirmation, confrontation, and then confession. So there's confirmation that you're doing what you're supposed to do, and you'll end up being confronted about it. In a nice way or whether in a appropriate way where you're recognized for it. But then in comes a confession. There were certainly nothing like Joseph, but there were times whenever I was involved in some circumstances where things just were not done nice to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to be around people that just it was just evil what happened. But whenever I got over it enough to say, well, whether or not they ever apologize, I'm going to move on and I'm going to learn from this. And, I'll learn, if nothing else, that, I'm not going to be like this if I'm in a point of leadership again.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened, months after that, the person in particular pulled me aside and, apologized and cried and said they really were sorry for what was happened and went on and on, and I'm like, okay, we're cool, that's fine.
Uh-huh.
And then a couple of days later they came back again and cried some more, and I ended up getting apologies from this one person for more than what I'd ever even hoped about. But at that time it wasn't nearly as important as it was whenever the stuff in my head and in my heart were going through it.
Yeah.
And, whenever he confronts his brothers and tells everybody to leave and it says he confronted them alone. I think that's part of it. He didn't make a big scene in front of people whose business it wasn't any of theirs, Now it sure came out, I would imagine, but the wailing that he did, I'm sure, was just his gut reliving all of it, but then also at the same time knowing that, okay, that's over. This is the new normal. Let's see what happens now,
Yeah, and it was a new, there was no going back. I mean, God totally changed the world and the dynamics of the world. And it's interesting, he used a worldwide famine. He used circumstances like God is using them now to reposition people. Otherwise, we wouldn't go there. And not even necessarily that we're disobedient. We just couldn't even think that that's where God would want us to go, where what he would want us to do. Certainly, yeah. The church has to meet. You know, certainly we've got to come together. That's a non-negotiable. Well, suddenly we can't come together. And I've likened it even in Acts 8, where the persecution broke out, and it says Philip went to Samaria. I mean, went to Samaria, and miracles happened there, and the people, he had the people's full attention. But my point is, he went someplace that he probably ordinarily would not have gone. Even though Joseph had said, Jesus had said, go to Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. But when he went there, he found the Lord. And I think that's the key right now, is to go to new places and find the Lord. And
John, we just got done building this new education addition onto the church. You know, how can we do that?
Exactly.
And we just put in all this new seating and new air conditioning and the new computer system. You know, what do you mean we're not supposed to come back to that?
Exactly. We've got too much to lose. And of course, you and I know when we studied leadership, this whole concept of one of the heuristics that clouds our decision making judgment is the sunken cost. We've put too much into it, and therefore we can't abandon it. We've put too much time. We've put too much effort. We've put too much money. So let's put more time, more money, more effort into it, because we got to make it work. But then circumstances come along, and you have no choice even but to move on. And the sunk costs are still pulling at you, but they become less and less over time. And that's why I think this pandemic is going to go on for a long season, because we need time to stop romanticizing the past, to get over, to mourn the past, so that we can embrace and engage new things. And that's not going to be that's not easy. And we're seeing this now, you know, that play out. But again, my focus is not so much culture. I mean, you were talking about the past. I mean, we lived through Vietnam. We thought in 1968 the country was done. I mean, that Democratic convention from Chicago, what went on there, and then Nixon and the riots on campus and the shootings at Kent State. We didn't know if our kids were going to have a nation. And so, I mean, I'm not saying, everything will be fine, because I think there's a lot of things that are different about this. But at the same time, my focus is on the church. What is God saying to me individually, and what is God saying to the church, and how can I help shape that message and hopefully participate in creating these new dynamics of ministry that I think God wants us to have. Bill, we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left, just so you know.
Yeah. You know, in our times together, you know, you've certainly taught me a lot about the DISC profile and what is it, like the high S personality, what is it, 80-some percent of the population?
Yeah, 70%.
Mm-hmm. 70%. So, you know, the high S, you know, stable, secure, you know, the keel of the ship, and their greatest fear is change. And so I think that's, you know, whenever I talk to people about personality styles and high S, I'm like, yeah, the high S, if you're going to move their office, you got to let them know 2 months ahead of time, you know, remind them again, you know, 2 weeks ahead of time, be there whenever the office is moved, hold their hand while you're walking them into the new office, and stop back in 3 days and say, hey, you know what, that plant that was outside of your office, should we bring it back in here for you to help them through change? And I mean, it's certainly, you know, I'm a high S in a lot of ways, and it's tough, you know. And again, it goes back to what's going on in between your ears, and how does that play out with what's in your heart as well, you know.
Yeah, and that's a good point, too, because it does take some people, it takes them longer to process the reality. Now, the beauty of the S style is once they're in, they're in. I mean, it may take them a while to get to that conclusion. I always watch these, you know, I was watching the other night this Normandy beach landing and all these 19-year-old farmers' sons, you know, coming out of amphibious landing craft and taking the beach because that's what they were told to do, because they were fighting for freedom as they perceived it, and they came home and never talked about it. You know, it's a beautiful thing. Of course, a lot of them suffered and had, you know, all kinds of mental problems and PTSD because they didn't know how to deal with it. They didn't even know how to talk about it. And you're right. That's a great extent of, to a large extent, what we're dealing with here now is change and the speed by which some people can process that, and we need to keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. And I think God has helped to that extent. God is helping us by not relieving the circumstances, because he is taking us someplace else, and that's going to require new mindsets. And for some people, it's going to take a while.
And that change, and I know that we're about done here, but that change, whenever there's change, there's always loss. Or perceived loss, if nothing else.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with loss, there's always, you know, it's like an onion, you know, there's a lot of layers to it and it stinks.
Yeah.
you just got to deal with it one layer at a time. And, you know, it's a process. You know, you get through one area and think, oh, geez, I'm over this. I'm through this. And then you get to the other side or partway through it, and there's something else that, oh, geez, this is another part of this that I didn't realize. And,
Yeah, exactly. And it's that's where leadership comes in. I mean, I think people who can process a little quicker have to help people frame. And again, that's something you and I studied and learned, how to frame what they're seeing and the reality that is before them. And that's why I've tried to be as active almost on a daily basis for more than 4 months now, to be presenting new thoughts and new ideas. And it's really been fascinating to me, Bill, to see me say something 8 times, and on the 8th time, somebody get it. You know, I thought it was pretty clear the first time, but it just took a while. And God in his patience and his mercy hangs with us. We scream and cry and throw a hissy fit and throw ourselves on the floor and, you know, I want this candidate, and don't want to wear masks. I want to go where I want to go. God, in his love and his mercy, is taking us to a new place. And not everybody's going to go. Some people will refuse to go. I want to go, and I know you do, and I know your wife does, and my wife does, and all those that I can influence, I hope to encourage them to be able to. To do the same. Well, Bill, I'm going to change the title of this show to the Genesis Joseph, because that was our focus and it was excellent.
Yeah.
And thank you for your insight. I know this story has been on your heart and your mind for a couple of weeks now, and I really appreciate what you had to offer.
It's always a pleasure, John. Always. And my wife's waving at you, but she doesn't have any nut rolls for you.
Yeah, but I saw some post the other day about she made something that was going to be shared. I mean, what was up with that?
I think that was a dream you had.
See, she's been part of the show all along. So, but no, your wife's a wonderful cook, and congratulations to her on her installation as a pastor, ordination last Sunday. We are looking for great things from her, as we always do. So anyway, Bill, take care. God bless. And you know we'll be talking probably on a daily basis. All righty. There we go. Bill Rhodes, my friend, board member for Purpose Quest International, talking a lot about Joseph and purpose and current events and what have you. So that's about it. We're going to wrap up now. Next week, I've got Wednesday and Friday scheduled. I'm working on somebody for Monday, so we'll see what transpires over the weekend. But again, if you're listening to this in the next day or so, tomorrow, July 18th, will be the deadline for enrolling in the online purpose classes. And So take care of that if you are interested. And I'm going to move on here. And this is John Stanko, your host for Wake Up to Purpose. And until we're together again, you know what my expectation is. I expect that you're going to be working on purpose in your life. Until we're together again, so long for now.
Thanks again for listening to Wake Up to Purpose with John Stanko. To get in touch with John, you can go to www.purposequest.com or write him at johnstanko@gmail.com.